Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. There's been an unprecedented change in the world of work in recent years, exacerbating an already apparent skills crisis. The World Economic Forum estimates that half of all employees will need reskilling by 2025. The issue? Companies lack clarity on the skills they have, the skills they need, what is the gap, and how to close it. So joining us to talk about this topic today, we're delighted to be joined by a global people data analytics thought leader and CEO of Simply Get Results. It's Simon Haynes. Hello, Simon. Welcome back. How are you?
Well, I'm very well, thank you. And it's great to be back here.
Brilliant. And as always, we're joined by our very own Mary Cullen, founder and managing director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Owen. You're very welcome, Simon.
Brilliant. So let's jump right in. So I suppose, Simon, to set a bit of context for us, a bit of an open question here for you. But how big is the skills gap crisis?
Well, do you know, Owen, you borrowed one of my absolute favourite stats a moment ago, not because it's a good thing, but because it's such a shocking number, that World Economic Forum. You know, that was a stat that they produced in October 2020, saying that 50% of all employees would need reskill by 2025. That was globally, it's across industries, it's in every role. So while that might vary from one place to another, boy is it a big number. To throw a couple of other stats in, if you'll forgive me, you know, McKinsey more recently, at the end of in the start of 2021, found that 87% of companies believe they have a skills gap now or within the next 2 years. Manpower Group, towards the end of 2021, identified that global talent shortages had reached a 15-year high. So we've certainly got the stats out there saying that this is a big problem. But I guess all of your audience today will just be thinking, well, what does it mean for me? And, you know, they will have their own experiences and perceptions of this, obviously. But certainly what we're seeing in the market is this is, you know, not just I can't get the delivery drivers. This isn't a localized skills crisis. The things that make the press are just things that make the press, but actually this is every industry, every location, all different roles and functions are having their own flavor of a skills crisis.
And I suppose given the unprecedented, and I hate using the word unprecedented, we've heard it so much over the past couple of years, but given that kind of increased kind of transformation in the past couple of years with everything that's going on, is the skills crisis even more kind of complex now? Are there even more skills required than there was before, in a sense?
Yeah, I think the big thing that adds complexity to the whole situation is obviously the diverse impact of the COVID pandemic. You know, customer behaviors changed, supply and demand for pretty much anything changed, employee expectations changed. And in the middle of that, I think what an awful lot of leaders, companies, individuals are asking is what's actually going on out there? You know, you read the newspapers, you get your various media feeds and you see an awful lot of stories, but is there any way of getting some reliable data on what is actually changing in order to get ahead of it? So yes, it's more complex. And, you know, as we talk, what I'd like to do, you know, with you today is share some experiences that might help organizations get ahead of that complexity.
And so Mary, I suppose my question for yourself is, do HR teams typically kind of hire for skills, or is it kind of more focused on kind of learning and development with current employees, just when we talk about the experience here in Ireland?
HR people are always hiring for skills, and through L&D, you're enhancing those skill sets or, you know, filling gaps that exist in the organization. But I think it's very common for us to hire for skills. And, you know, virtually every HR person I know is struggling to fill roles at the moment. And, you know, we look at things like the Great Resignation, and you know, there's different views about whether that's existing or not existing in Ireland. But certainly from what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing out there, people are moving. roles are more difficult to fill. The candidates are fussier about what they're willing to do in terms of their work and the hours of work and where they work and how they work. So there's, I suppose, a myriad of things coming together that is making it difficult to hire people. And when it comes to skill set, I think there are real shortages in certain sectors, and we're really seeing that in Ireland. You know, so we're seeing shortages in finance, we're seeing shortages in professional roles in construction, we're seeing shortages with, you know, people like drivers, we're seeing shortages in nursing and teaching, we're seeing shortages in HR. We just filled 3 open roles recently, and it's the hardest I've ever found it to be to find the skills that we need. And then it's, you know, we have a whole new range of skills that we need in HR. So all the whole digital side of things has opened up, the technology side of things has opened up. And we're missing, you know, fundamental skill sets. The marketing side of things has opened up from a HR perspective. You know, how good are we at marketing? Do we have that skill set? Are we trained to market, you know, towards our internal markets? No. So I think there's quite a lot of skills missing that we need to plug the gaps with L&D. But I guess when it comes back to society and how are we tackling this whole issue, is it through our systems, our education, our work? Where do we tackle it? So I'm really interested to hear from Simon about how do we actually get ahead of this stuff? You know, from an HR perspective, what can we do to help our organizations? Some of it, I think, is about planning, workforce planning, and how much of us are really doing that and doing it really well. I have a question around that.
I was going to say, and that's the question really for yourself, Simon, I suppose. How do we kind of assess the current skills within a workforce? And how do we find out what's missing? Because obviously it's missing, so it's harder to see, isn't it?
This is it. You know, two sides of the coin. What do I have? What do I need? And then, of course, what's the difference? And what am I going to do about it? So, look, I mean, starting with assessing your current workforce. I mean, each of us as employees, team members, managers, leaders, we make judgments about the skills around us. And those are based on our experience. But, you know, what we see versus what we don't see and what we believe, you know, employees have versus, you know, any reality. So what we see around us may or may not be accurate. Most companies are holding some sort of data on people, roles and skills, but that data tends to be very, very incomplete, you know, inaccurate, out of date. So you know, the vast majority of companies are not sitting there going, I've got all the data that I need on the skills that I have today. And so that leads intuitively a lot of organizations and HR functions onto, well, I need to go and ask everyone what skills they've got. And the problem with that is it's a painful, long administrative and exercise, and often actually never reaches its conclusion. And as you ask people what skills they've got, people join, leave, train, get trained, etc. And by the time you've finished, you're out of date. So it is a bit of a conundrum figuring out what skills you might have in your organization. And one of the things that we're doing with the data and software that we use here at Simply Get Results that we provide to clients is actually finding automated ways to estimate skills. So, you know, whether you've got 10, 100, 1,000 or 10,000 people, we've got ways of estimating the most likely skills associated with any role, which can really fast forward conversations about, OK, if that's roughly what I've got, then let's move on to what we need and what we do about it. And of course, you know, the two sides of the equation, what have we got versus what we need? I'm sure we'll talk about that more. But there are many ways to figure out what your strategic direction should be in terms of skills. And I'll pause there because I sense it's probably a different topic of conversation.
I think, I suppose, Mary, I suppose, like everything that Simon says there is obviously a very obvious kind of business case for tackling the skills gap in a company, isn't there?
Without a doubt. And while Simon is pausing there, I'm kind of saying, well, you know, if we're not strategic about acquiring the kind of skills that the organization needs for the future, then we're at nothing. And the idea of estimating for skills is fantastic because, you know, Simon, I have seen so many projects along those lines fail where a HR department or function or individual is tasked with assessing the skills within the organization. So where do they go? If you're going to try and do it manually, where do you go? To the CV? Well, that's all well and good if we've got a new hire and the skills are A, obvious, and B, up to date. Let's go back 5 years and look at the CV of somebody who's been with the company for 5 years. Where are we now going to get the data? It's going to be out of date almost immediately. You know, 1, 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. You know, how accurate is the data you're going to gather from the paper that you hold? So let's say we rule that out. That's an unreliable way of gathering that data and is laborious and tedious and all the rest of it. So do you then ask people to put in their skills into some kind of a system and assess it through that? Great, will everyone do it? You know, I don't know, maybe that is the answer, but I am curious as to how would you go about collecting that data? And do you really need to go about collecting it in that way? Is it something that each organization needs to dig into the data that they hold on their, you know, training records, on their CVs, from what managers tell you the skills are? Because if you want a fully rounded picture, isn't that presumably the kind of effort you would have to go to? And to do that at a large scale would be impossible. And that's why it's not done. So I'm curious, how do you estimate for skills?
Yeah, so look, a bit of technical detail here. So we have global labor market data, which is basically lists of roles and skills, but in the hundreds of millions. So this is anywhere that an employer can put a job vacancy, so corporate websites, job boards, etc., and anywhere an employee can put their CV or resume or apply for a job. We've, you know, consolidated and analysed all of that data and organised it into taxonomies, which roll up and make sense. And that's a really powerful data set. And what that means is we can take any job title, which might be as simple as project manager or might be project manager level 3 Cork City, and map it to the most likely market defined roles that are out there. And every role that's out there has got the associated skills with it based on what employers have been asking for and what employees have been offering. So really market-led definition of skill. And what we find is that can bring that holistic picture, Mary, that you're talking about, because in any organization, skills data is distributed all over the place. So what we do is we bring a sort of an answer that is not perfect. It's maybe 80% right for any organization, but 80% right is a whole lot better than not really being able to move forward because your data is all over the place.
I think kind of jumping deeper into what you said earlier about being kind of strategic as well, Simon, I suppose, take a HR team, for example. And my question is kind of around, where do they kind of look for the data to see what they need, what skills do they need? So taking an HR example, HR team, for example, like Mary mentioned earlier, looking at skills like marketing, communicating, that kind of stuff. But if a HR team isn't, I suppose, doing anything around employer brand or doesn't have a need for that, do they need to focus on those kind of skills? So I suppose my question is it solely internal, an internal project to find out what skills you need? Or is there that element of looking at what's out there in the market and saying, well, general HR teams, our competitors also have these kind of roles and skills, so should we be looking at those?
I would argue that the right answer is both, is to ask internally what's going on, because obviously, you know, people know each other, they have experience and data and insight and all of those good things. So you've obviously got to ask internally, but when you combine that with an external lens, we find that the way to ask what good looks like is to look at three types of comparator, three types of benchmark. One is in your industry, who are the big players, and have a look at what they're doing. That will sort of set the baseline for what good looks like. The second is what are innovators doing in your industry? Because what we find consistently across industries is that innovators in each industry are doing something different. They are approaching the same market, the same industry, with a different skill set and a different capability set, often technology driven, often very customer centric, often some good, you know, modern things like analytics and so on, but they're actually handling the situation differently. So first is your established competitors, second is innovators. And thirdly is look at organizations that are doing something you want to be really good at. Customer experience. You know, if you're in retail, you want to be great at customer experience. Do you only look at other retailers, or do you look at the travel and tourism industry, the hotel industry, the tech industry? And when you look at other organizations doing something you want to be good at, you know what, you learn, because they show you what they're doing. And this is even without using the sophisticated market data that we've got. You can be doing your own research and Googling and so on.
How do you use the research you've got, Simon? So if a HR person, you know, wants to look at the skills, and so say, for instance, they're looking at, you know, difficulties attracting a certain type of skill set to their organization, but they know that strategically they need these skills to compete in the future. How would they use the data that your kind of a system will give them to make those decisions? Because I find a lot of HR people, probably much like me, you know, there's a couple of camps. There's those that are hugely into data, understand what they can do with the information, and understand how it can help the organization. And then there are others who are afraid of it and don't know what it could do or how to make a business case for it, or even understand themselves what it could do for the organization. So can you shed any light on any of that?
Let me try, and I completely relate to what you're saying, that one of the perception challenges when we start talking about data or analysis or whatever is that, you know, people say, oh gosh, that doesn't sound like something I could deal with, or I don't think I would have access to it, or I'm not sure it's going to work around here. But actually, you know, we find it's much easier than people fear, and that really the way to do it is to be working with some data, whether it's data you've already got in-house, data you're getting from a partner or a supplier, data that another part of your organization might have, and just start doing something with it. Because we find that actually familiarity really helps, and actually you're building a bit of confidence. Also working with someone that's, you know, quite data experienced always helps. And again, you can often find those in your organization, whether it's in HR or somewhere else. But to your example, Mary, you know, when companies are having difficulty, you know, attracting or securing new hires, you know, what might they do with data? You know, a few specific examples. So, you know, understanding information about the supply and availability of people is really helpful. You know, are they fighting for a very small pool, or are they, you know, competing within a big pool of talent? Understanding what your competitors are looking for and hiring for is helpful. Again, you know, do you want to compete in the same way as your competitors, or do you want to compete differently? Do you want to express your job or your value proposition? Do you want to express it differently? And finally, I would say, and this is probably the thing that I think is a most powerful option for most companies. Lots of organizations and industries are bashing heads competing for a very narrow definition of skill, whether it's a delivery driver, a civil engineer, a nurse. You know, you gave a few really good examples earlier, Mary. And the fact is, those those pools of skills are pretty finite, right? And so, and actually, because of this skills crisis, those pools are more constrained than ever. There's more competition than ever. So just fighting for last year's definition of a role or a skill is unlikely to be the most successful unless you have the most money, frankly, or the most attractive brand or the nicest office or whatever. So for most organizations, what can they do is they can take a little step sideways, and instead of fighting for that narrow definition of the perfect role, is expand the definition or break the definition of a perfect role down into its component parts. If I really want a finance project manager, could I take a finance person and train them in project management, or a project manager and train them in finance? And we find that just that little sideways step, which we call adjacency, the similarity of one role to another, one skill to another, that little sideways step and that little broadening of the definition opens up new talent pools and means that you can compete in a different way within your budget.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you're saying there, Simon, because I think with any crisis, skills crisis, the general crisis we've had in the world of work and beyond in the past couple of years, there is also opportunities to come out of crises or crises. And I suppose my question, Simon, is when we look at, you mentioned HR teams earlier, looking at those kind of top 10% of performing HR teams, I think you call them pathfinders in your report at the end of last year. Is this something that HR teams can do and look at as an opportunity? And really, I suppose, use this time to recover from the pandemic, using that skills gap, filling that to really kind of boost their performance now as they look forward.
Yeah, look, I think there's a number of reasons why, frankly, we have no choice. HR teams have no choice about looking at skills. So it's more a question of what are you doing and how. You know, operationally, as we used to say, probably terribly rude description, do you have the right bums on seats? You know, do we have all of the people in all of the roles that we need to keep performing operationally? Strategically, do we have the skills we need to compete, to win? And of course, there's been so much change in the market. Do we have the skills we need to change? So, look, I think most organizations have realized that they need to embrace the skills challenge. So then it becomes a question of, you know, how are they going about that, rather than should they be going about that?
Absolutely. And I think building on that, then, I suppose for my final question to both of you, and I'll come to yourself for this first, Mary. So I suppose our listeners are obviously thinking, what can they do? So what are some of the key things that HR teams and leaders should do to kind of get started with tackling the skills crisis?
Well, I love the idea that you need to think about skills, you know, and that example that Simon gave is really important from the point of view of, I know we recently, one of our hires, looked for a writing skill ahead of HR knowledge, which was probably for the first time ever that we took that view, because we know that as long as you have a certain set of skills that we can teach the HR piece, or we can provide a training course, we can provide, additional skills to people over time. But the writing piece was one of the most important pieces for us. So, you know, we carefully looked at a particular role that we were struggling to fill and looked at how we could be creative around filling it. And having filled it, I have now thought to myself, why didn't we do this years ago? How much easier would our life have been years ago? Because we can teach the elements of the job that were missing, which it was much more difficult for us to teach writing skill to the people who had HR ability than it was for us to teach HR skill to someone with writing ability. So, you know, it just, you know, in my mind, made me look and think differently at what we could actually recruit for. And how much better it has made that particular team to have that particular skill set in-house, which we were always missing to the level at which we wanted it. So it really makes sense to me that, you know, if we're thinking creatively, and I see HR people struggling all the time, you know, if their metric that, you know, filling a role within a certain amount of days, which a lot of HR teams are, you know, to ensure that we, from the time the job is advertised to the days to hire, there's a metric there. And if you're missing that metric because you can't fill a role and it's taking you a very long time to do so, then it is about pulling apart that role, looking at the skill elements within it, looking about the parts you can train people to do, putting in place training programs internally, sourcing external people to provide that training. So knowledge is power. If you've got the data, if you understand how you can use it, then you can really make a difference within your organization. And it may take a bit of influencing, a bit of convincing that hiring manager, that, you know, recruiting manager that, look, this is what we're now looking for. Forget what we have always had. We're now looking for a different kind of a person that we can develop over time, provided they have the core skills for the job. And we've identified these five things that somebody must have and these other areas we can train for. And I just find that a real flip, because most HR people, you know, work with the hiring manager, get a job spec from that person. They've detailed kind of standard, you know, must be a team player and work on own initiative, must do this and that. And it's not specific enough for you to break down, well, actually, what are we looking for? What kind of skills does this person actually need to have? What can we train for? What can we hire for?
And same question to yourself, Simon, I suppose, is there any guidance that you share for HR teams, leaders, to really kind of get started and begin to tackle this crisis?
Yeah, look, I've got a few things to throw in. The first one is where you focus. So you're not going to win the skills battle on every front, nor do you need to. One way or another, for any organization at any time, some things are more important than others. Some skills are more important than others. So it's to figure out, you know, which skills and capabilities matter most to your business or your part of the business right now. That could be operationally or strategically. It could be from a downside risk perspective. What if we don't have them versus an upside growth perspective? What can we do with them? Also from an employee perspective, you know, what message do we want to send to our workforce now, the workforce we're hiring? From a customer perspective, what skills are we building that are going to serve our customers? So making a decision through a number of lenses about where to focus and fighting the battle, you know, fighting your first battle and winning your first battle where it matters most. So where to focus is my first thing. Secondly is how to approach. And Mary, you spoke a moment ago about being creative. And our analysis of, you mentioned earlier, Owen, the pathfinding HR organizations that are making a bigger impact on their business. They are being creative. They are experimenting. They are not taking last year's approach to next year's problem, because guess what? That probably isn't going to work. So they are having to be creative. Thirdly, who is contributing? This is not an HR only problem or need or solution. And Mary, you said earlier on, you know, who are you influencing? You need business sponsors. You need the right HR people involved. You probably want an employee contribution. And frankly, we would say this, right? But have you got the right partners and advisors supporting you? Because, you know, you're solving some difficult and fundamentally important new problems. So who's on your team? Who's in your gang? And finally, and again, I would say this, but what support are you getting from data and technology? Is your data and technology you have in-house adequate right now? In which case, fantastic, use it, make the best of it. Or is there a recognized need or an emerging realization that actually, if we had slightly different or better data, different or better technology, that this would give us, you know, more opportunity, more ability to solve these problems that we know we need to solve around skills right now.
Brilliant. And I suppose that's the crux of what we've been saying today. I think it's some of that kind of Liam Neeson code about hiring for a very particular set of skills, but also thinking about it differently, isn't it? And being creative and bringing in the right people. So thank you, Mary. And thank you, Simon, for a very insightful discussion. And I really hope that helped our listeners and I suppose give them confidence around tackling the skills gap. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to subscribe and do please join the discussion on our social media channels. Make sure to check the show notes for useful resources related to today's topic. We will share some of Simon's fantastic work on this topic. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.